You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate it and hope you have a good time. If you do, my only small favor that I ask in return is that you tell a friend, family member, coworker about it, and maybe a digital community through a rating system wherever you subscribe. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the carafe of oyster crackers to my complimentary saltines, my dear friend Andy.
Brah, brah, yay!
Here we are. Ooh, Toastin' is back.
We're here.
It's a toasty Saturday this time, Andy.
That's right.
Special event podcast this week. Really exciting. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. This one meant a lot to me.
This was
really
a big
looking
one.
Forward to this one for a long
this
time.
This is a big one. Our silent partner Nate is with us for this very special episode. What's so special? It really just means something to us. One of our favorite artists, someone that we've been playing on this show since it began, and someone that Andy has turned lots of people onto over the last 4 years. Flint Eastwood was in the house. Jax, who is the kind of the creative force behind Flint Eastwood, was here. She and the band are on tour, just played Seattle last night as we're recording this, and they're going to be in Portland as we are recording this evening. So awesome that Jax was able to stop by and hang out with us. And what an absolute delight, Andy.
Yeah.
Delivered, you know? Met every expectation.
Yeah, it's great that you meet somebody you really, really like their music, and they're nice, and they're a good person.
Yeah. She's like my perfect kind of artist to have a conversation with because she's thoughtful and she's obviously very serious about the way she goes about her business, but also can roll with our bullshit and our nonsense.
Yeah.
Which, you know, really humanizes her.
And that says a lot.
Yeah, it does. It means a lot. So I don't want to belabor things too much. If anyone hasn't heard Flint Eastwood through our show, flinteastwood.com is the website, or Flint Eastwood Music. .com, one of the two. You can find a couple of albums of theirs on Bandcamp. You can find everything, including the newest release that came out just last year, on Spotify. But please do yourself a favor and seek out Jackson Flint Eastwood.
And do yourself a real favor and see them live, because it is fun. They put on an amazing show.
Yeah, take a look and see when she's coming to your town, because well worth it. So just kick back, enjoy the sillies and the sounds with Jax of Flint Eastwood on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
Yes! Dude, okay.
One thing we do have going for us in Portland, though, is we have the bins. Where it's like the Goodwill outlet, where everything is just in, they call it the bins because everything's just in giant bins.
Oh my God.
And it's by the pound for the most part.
See, that's sick. But it's like actually branded as a Goodwill outlet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's kind of like the last spot this stuff goes before it goes to the dump. So
it's like last season's pile of garbage.
Damn.
To sift through.
And you can find some great stuff, but there's also people there with their phones out taking pictures of every single barcode of every book, filling up shopping carts and going down to Powell's to see how much they can make.
Oh,
there's people there who make their living, you know. So it's very cutthroat. When they bring those new bins out, it's like a feeding frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have your elbows up.
The hustle is real.
It really is.
Damn.
People have like face masks and gloves on and stuff because they're worried
smart.
About particulates and
and hepatitis.
Yeah. And I'm not worried about any of that stuff. That gives me the advantage.
You get it, you know.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, it's part of life.
Mm,
part
he
of
dies,
digging
he dies.
Through someone else's garbage.
Yes.
In a store.
Yes, everything's a balance, you know.
So, at this point in your musical career, what's the most glamorous part of touring for you? Like, what's the little luxury that you've gotten built in now that you've got a few reps under your belt?
Honestly, just time. Having the extra time to see friends and having the extra time to like sit and read and write and like experience things rather kind of like what we were saying before, kind of instead of having to chase a bus and having to be in the next city the next day. And like when I say chasing a bus, I mean like whenever you're on a tour with a band that's in a bus, what will happen is that like they end their set at like 11 o'clock at night, and then you have to do merch for an hour. And then so you're leaving there at midnight, and what they're doing is they're driving overnight to the next city to get there. And so you have to drive overnight to the next city to get there. But then it's also that time of like in the day, you can't check into the hotel until 3 o'clock. And so like you're stuck in a van during the day, and then you have to drive at night. And it's, so it's just like this consistent, like you're only seeing a venue. And so it can get very taxing. So whenever you're on a headline tour, it's like you actually get to see a city and sleep.
You're the pace car.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody has to follow your lead. That's great.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And you get to choose. I think a great luxury about like doing your own headline tour too is that you get to choose who opens for you. And so we're out with this great artist from LA named Soam. And she's just like a fantastic writer, and like really I found out last night that she's a big ABBA fan like myself, and so therefore we'll definitely be listening to some ABBA in the green room.
Do you have any favorite deep ABBA cuts?
Oh man,
are there deep ABBA cuts?
There are
all of it's
so
gold
many.
Right,
oh yeah, they've all of it's gold. Oh shit, that's close. Anyways, any deep ABBA cuts? I think I can't speak for any deep ABBA cuts, but I can definitely say that my favorite ABBA song is SOS.
Ah, see, that's deep to me.
See, yeah. I mean, people, I feel like if it's outside of like Mamma Mia and like Dancing Queen, then people are like, that's a deep ABBA cut.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was talking to Soam, she said she liked the song Money, 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 which is kind of a deeper cut.
I like that song. Yeah. I had this, I forget the name of this band. I found this thrift store tape collection of this Japanese pop group that did ABBA songs. Kind of in English.
Oh my god, amazing.
It was like Japanese disco. It was so cool.
What a find.
And they did Money, 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 and it was so cool.
Dude, Cher just did like a whole record of ABBA covers.
What?
I know. And so
she was in the Mamma Mia 2, right? She was.
Oh, that makes sense.
She was Mamma Mia?
I didn't see Mamma Mia 2. I didn't see either. Yeah, it just didn't tickle my fancy. But let me tell you something, as a very gay human being, coupling Cher and ABBA together?
Yeah.
Shit.
That's
like,
powerful.
Yes.
You don't think it's a little on the nose?
It's totally on the nose. I love it. Like, throw some drag queens in there. Let's just complete this.
Yeah.
Oh, Cher is the best, though. I follow Cher on Twitter, and, like, she uses so many emojis.
Yeah. She also literally hasn't aged in, like, 55
years.
It's
phenomenal.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's, wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. What an icon.
I feel like she's, like, I was trying to think of who are some of our national treasures.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a moving target, but that sort of Cher has got to be.
She's had her turn.
She's an institution.
Yeah, she's had her turn, definitely. Yeah.
Yes, she is great.
Jax, what's your first musical memory?
Whoa. Okay. First musical memory.
Or the first thing that sticks out as an encounter with music that has stuck with you.
I think like the actual first musical memory that I have is being, I grew up in a Pentecostal church, which is like raise your hands and like slain in the spirit and like, you know, like everybody's like passing out and it's like some culty shit.
Yeah.
And I just very distinctly remember being at church on a Sunday night, because we would go like 3-4 times a week, and I was there on a Sunday night and the band was playing and I was so tired and I just slept through the whole thing, and it was at that moment that I realized that I can literally sleep through anything, because it was just like people were like screaming and hollering and I was out because the music was so boring.
That's a powerful life skill.
That is, especially for touring.
Yeah.
It's like being able to sleep through anything is powerful. Yes.
My kids are the same way. I've been taking them to see live music since they were born, and they can sleep through anything. But one time, all of our smoke detectors started going off for no reason, and we couldn't get them to turn off. And they slept through that, too.
Dang.
So that's kind of scary. They can sleep through a house fire.
Dang.
Very low chance that your house is going to just burst into flames, though.
Yeah, true. But I'm not gonna roll those dice.
Knock on so much wood.
Yeah, knock on this joint holder.
So it's funny. I thought you were going to go down the, like, the church music was what kind of brought you into music, but it actually just literally put you to sleep.
Early on, yes. I mean, later on, I, like, learned how to, like, write music and play guitar, and, like, I learned how to, like, be a part of a band by being in, like, the youth group band. But during my childhood, it was definitely very boring.
What was the first music you remember loving, like, for yourself?
Spice Girls.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
The Spice Girls. But I wasn't allowed to listen to the Spice. It was really weird. I wasn't allowed to listen to the Spice Girls because they were way too risque. But I was allowed to watch Spice World, the movie.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
but
makes sense.
It made no sense at all. So I knew all of their songs, but I only knew like a minute and a half clips of them from like what they sang in the movies. But it was just enough to like know the choruses, you know?
Right.
But I would spend... Like, that was, like, my movie that I would, like, obsess over.
That's awesome. That was my sister's favorite movie.
Oh, it was
she was so,
so
into it.
Wonderfully
when Destiny's
terrible.
Child came out, that was, like, just laser pointed at her, too.
Yeah.
She's just like, yes, girls, powerful girls.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. What was your favorite Spice Girl?
I really like Jerry.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was good. Which Spice was she?
I think it was Ginger Spice.
Ginger Spice, yes.
Yeah, she was great.
I liked Sporty Spice a lot, too.
Sporty Spice was cool. I feel like she was a little extra for me. Mm-hmm. But, like, I loved Jerry mm-hmm. because she just seems like that type of motherfucker that, like, if you got in a bar fight, she would either, like, neutralize it or, like, really kick some ass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
That's when I'd bring in Scary Spice.
Oh, yeah. She was definitely second favorite.
Yeah.
Man, she was... She got those high kicks on lock. Like, mm-hmm.
That's
damn.
A weird pick, too, to go with Scary Spice compared to all the rest
of
them.
Oh, yeah.
Like
that's
ginger
bold.
And like posh.
That's
I think Baby is a weird one.
Yeah,
I think
Baby,
Baby
is a weird
Spice
one.
Was a weird choice.
I feel like that almost was given to her.
You think so?
As just like, you're the youngest. You're the baby.
You're the Baby Spice.
Let's call you Baby Spice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a, sort of a weird thing to kind of quasi sexualize.
Yes.
Weird, yeah.
I will say they could have gone. Over the top with it, but I feel like they never did. Like
no.
It was, it was never that like weird, creepy. Like, oh, you're like a little kid.
Yeah,
it was just always like the young kid in like the sorority feel.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Totally.
Like
yeah.
Toddler Spice would have been worse.
Oh yeah,
Toddler Spice would have been a mess. Yeah.
The terrible two Spice. Yeah, that would have been really. Yeah.
Or preteen Spice. Preteen Spice would have been.
Oh,
not
Tween Spice would have been. Yeah.
Teen Spice is horrible. Oh man.
Tween Spice was like my first deodorant though. Yeah, it smelled like licorice.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
But like...
And
like,
fear.
Like, yeah, Twizzlers.
Oh, my God.
And fear. Well, so many questions, but would love to kick things off with a song. Is there a particular song? Did you bring some tracks or...
So I belong to this like music collective called Assemble Sound in Detroit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so a lot of my music is made... through just like artists out of that space. I know you guys got connected with me because of Pasalacqua. I also know Pasalacqua has worked out of that space with me.
That's awesome.
But there's a an amazing artist by the name of Nige that just released an EP, and he has a song called Immortal Youth that's just so fantastic.
Nice.
Awesome.
Awesome. Let's
check,
check
that out.
Yeah.
There's nothing like this feeling when it's easy. Focus.
have a lot of different kinds of musicians on the show, but very few that I would say are kind of like pop artists. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of develop the sound that you have now, and what made you gravitate toward that pop genre?
Yeah, I originally started writing music as a folk artist. Like whenever I like very first started writing, I was just obsessed with folk music. It was back in like the Arcade Fire, like Sufjan Stevens, like all of those, that kind of folk where it's like kind of a poppier kind of vibe. Also got like really into like Woody Guthrie and like that kind of vibe for a while.
Yes, I love that old stuff.
Yeah, like it's very, I'm very into like the storytelling vibe of like that mm-hmm. whole genre.
Drew hates it.
That's a gross misrepresentation.
Well, I think it was very oversaturated for a very long time.
Yeah.
But anyways, I started out making folk music, and then my brother was a part of a band, and he was very obsessed with hip hop music and like loved Pharrell and like Clips and like anything that like Star Trek produced. He loved like Chad Hugo, like that whole vibe. Mm-hmm. And so one day he was just like in our parents' garage making a beat, and I was like, oh, this is dope. Like, and I started like singing a melody, and he's like, his whole thing is just like anytime someone comes into a room and sings a melody, he's like, lay it down, because he's just like obsessed with the idea of like an idea can become a different idea. And so he turns on the microphone and I just start singing, and it kind of just clicked. And so we started writing together, and like our common ground was that we both like pop music, because I was like, there's no fucking way I'm doing like a hip hop project. Yeah. But then later on, like I did a fucking hip hop project with like Poslock and shit. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, pop music has always been very appealing, because it's the word pop can be a part of any genre, because it basically just means popular, and it means like it's a certain like format of structure of the song. Mm-hmm. And
that
so
is,
you
that
can
is the strangest genre tag, I think.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It just means popular. It's not.
Yeah. So you can have pop rock, and you can have like, you know, you can even have like pop rap, and like you can have anything. It just means that like a wide audience will like it. And so for me, I do music because I want to help people, and I want to spread a message of like positivity and loving yourself and loving the people around you. And like I really like targeting a lot of what I do to like young girls, and making sure that they're like knowing that they can be a boss if they want to be a boss, or like whatever they want to do in life. And I think the best avenue to do that is to make pop music, and to kind of try to reach as many people as possible that way. And I just fucking love pop music. Like I think it's great. Like all of it. I love Top 40. I love the indie stuff. Like I think it's an amazing thing when you can turn on a song and immediately want to dance, or be able to sing along by the end of it. I think that's a phenomenon that's very interesting.
I agree. Do you have any pop songs that are on the radio right now that you love?
Yeah, man. Ariana Grande's new record is amazing.
Oh, God is a Woman.
Oh, so good. All of Sweetener's is phenomenal. Troye Sivan's new record is incredible.
I like that new Khaled song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, man, his voice is just stupid, like soulful, like
it's super good.
His past lives have seen some shit, you know. Like he's experienced some stuff. I love Billie Eilish. I think what she does is really interesting.
You guys are blowing my mind. I have no idea.
Yeah, man, this is pop music right now.
Yeah, pop music is very. It's at a very cool space of like it's not. Like no one is about like bubblegum pop music right now. I think, but if they are a part of bubblegum pop music, it's like Charlie XCX bubblegum pop, where it's like so to the other side
just, like,
that it's
extreme
like
extreme saccharine.
Yes, and it's extremely interesting, and like still what she does is like incredibly creative, and like she just takes it to the extreme. There's no like half-assing anything in pop music right now.
No.
And I love it. I really love it.
What I'm really liking right now in the hip hop world, it's almost like emo hip hop is popular right now.
Yeah,
like,
it's getting there.
Like XXXTentacion, that dude stuff. I mean, unfortunately, he's dead, and he did a lot of bad shit.
Yeah.
But fucking music is moving. It's got this soulful kind of like depressed, damaged persona behind it.
I think there's also like a dangerous side of pop music right now that really glorifies like drug culture in a very horrible way, and very much glorifies depression. And it's like, I think it's great that it's the kind of thing where people are talking about it more, and it's a part of like culture to like it, for it to be more acceptable to like at least acknowledge it. But I think at a certain point we're just going to have to be like, okay, well, what's the root of this? Why is everyone depressed and sad and anxious? Yeah. Instead of just like it being like a cool thing to talk about right mm-hmm. now, you know?
Yeah, right now people are just becoming more open to communication about it.
Yeah, which I think is fantastic. I totally like get that, though. Exposure is the most important thing to get any kind of social change. I'm just a big fan of whenever the exposure turns into action.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you've taken sort of pop, and you were saying that there is a sort of a familiar structure to a pop song, but you've obviously made it and taken it and made it your own. How did you find creativity within kind of the familiar feeling of pop music?
Well, I think with any kind of art form, like photography or painting or, you know, filmmaking, there are general concepts that you're taught off the bat, typically through like a class or like or some kind of mentor. And a lot of times with songwriting, people just don't consider those elements. And I feel like with songwriting, pop is like the basic elements. It's the composure. It's the, you know, the composition, the color theory. It's like, that's what a pop song is. It's like mm-hmm. the general idea of how to write a pop song.
It's the fundamentals.
It's the fundamentals. Yeah. And so for me, like once I felt like I still feel like I'm learning the fundamentals. I think I'll never stop learning the fundamentals. But for me, I love to have that base and kind of dance around it. I think the most interesting pop songs and the songs that stick the most is you're able to take those fundamentals, but also do something that's authentic for yourself. And so for me, I just do what I think is cool. You know, like I think that like, you know, I'll listen to like only producers for a while, and then I'll listen to like a lot of pop music for a while, and then I'll get really into poetry, and then I'll get really into photography, and then I'll get really into like video. And I think all of it, being able to blend all of it into my project is something that like is the reason why I think I'm able to mm-hmm. to continue doing it.
I know that like melody and lyrics are really important to you. I've read that you usually start with lyrics and kind of build a song out from that concept. Mm-hmm. How does that process work? Because I feel like a lot of musicians work in reverse, where they get a great skeleton for a song, and then sometimes they're just latching on any kind of lyrics to it. How does that process work for you? Where do you start when it comes to lyrics and melody?
Yeah, with lyrics and melody, I typically, if I'm starting, well, with my songwriting process, it all depends on how I'm feeling that day. I think it changes a lot, but definitely starting with lyrics to me, like the my most successful songs and my most successful in the sense that like I like them the most, mm-hmm. have been through like having lyrics already set up. And for me, it's the kind of thing where I try to keep a notebook by me or try to like keep my phone on me to where I can like use the notes really quick. Mm-hmm. Anytime I get like a thought or like somebody will say something to me or part of my alone time on tour and just like back home is I love to just be able to sit in a public space and just describe what's happening around me and like not necessarily like how I feel, but just what other people are doing. I think people are fascinating. Like I love asking people questions.
So you're really just annotating a scene.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite spot to people watch in Detroit?
Any coffee shop is, there's a coffee shop called Astro that I really love. In Detroit, they have amazing espresso. There's also a coffee shop called Great Lakes. That's, typically, a lot of people are just there, so mm-hmm. I like to sit there as well. I love to go to the Detroit Institute of Arts. That's like my jam. They have a beautiful courtyard. Museums are always interesting too because it's every type of person. You mm-hmm. know, it's never like one demographic that's there. It's like field trips and old people and couples and
yeah,
lonely old
people
guys.
People using the bathroom.
Yeah,
you know, just stuff like that.
Well, if you get any time in Portland, Pioneer Square downtown, they call it Portland's living room. Best place for people watching in the city.
Oh, I love people
it's
watching.
It's in between the Max Lines going east and west, and all the crust punks are down there playing music, and
nice.
Just everybody kind of comes through there at some point. Man. On the other side of that, the worst people watching in Portland is the Milwaukee Bottle Drop.
Why?
Please don't go there.
What is that?
It's just, I mean, a lot of people.
It's been named the worst people watching spot for 5 years
oh,
consecutive.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a rough and tumble place. I mean, these people working their asses off collecting these cans. We just switched to 10 cents here for cans.
Oh, wow.
So now it's suddenly an industry.
It was five.
But Michigan, hasn't Michigan always been 10?
Yeah,
Michigan's
man.
Always been on the
longest time.
Cutting edge. Yeah.
For the longest time, they were the only 10-cent state. But now Oregon's there, too.
Damn.
So, yeah.
Welcome
bottle drop
club.
Shops are wild. So
dang.
I don't recommend it, but I do it a lot.
Sick.
I used to live in this part of town, and we had a neighborhood kid who would had fashioned like a chariot for himself. He was probably 11 years old, and he would
love
put in like 9 hour days and travel like a 6 mile radius collecting cans. He made like $90 a day.
He worked his ass off.
And he was he was a very hardworking kid.
That's amazing.
Nate, do you have a question?
No, it was a fucking
no, he
bike.
Didn't have a dog. It was his bike, but he did have a giant American flag that he would unfurl behind his cart because he wanted people to not like ride up on him on the streets.
Yeah,
he would also have a bundle of sticks that he would toss over his shoulder if cars would get too close. This kid was intense. He got his dad jobs doing like landscaping and stuff like that.
Wow,
he was very entrepreneurial.
I like this kid.
Yeah, he was
love
right.
This kid hustles. Yeah, I feel like I did shit like that when I was a kid.
Me too.
I'm impressed with people who learn how and why to work at a very young age.
Yes,
I would never say I've been like a lazy, explicitly lazy person, but I've never known where to put my energies or how to focus myself.
Yeah, I was always the entrepreneurial type, even from like when I was a kid. Like I would go to my grandma's house all the time because my parents were always working. And I would go to the end of the street where there was a Hungry Howie's pizza, and I would purchase a pizza and I would sell it on the street corner, buy the slice, $2 a slice, and I would make profits.
Where did that come from? How did you get that idea?
I have no idea. I just always was like, I think I really liked the thrill of like the challenge of like trying to convince somebody to buy something they didn't need, like as a kid, like as fucked up as that is. Like even in middle school, I would go and buy like packs. I would buy packs of gum for 25 cents, and there would be 5 pieces of gum, and then I would sell them for 25 cents a piece because I knew what I had. I knew they wanted it.
Yes.
Knew they wanted that fresh breath.
I used to do the same thing with 12 packs of Mountain Dew at the skate park.
Yes.
I'd go buy a 12 pack and sell them all for $1
a piece. Oh, man, that's fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
Just hoarding some dews at the skate park.
Which is so funny.
They were all
like,
so extreme. You knew they were going to crack into a Mountain Dew eventually. Just had to be there.
It's just so opposite of like the way that I feel as an adult. Like I feel like my tour manager Ryan, who is close by, has to remind me that I can't give away our merch for free all the time. I want to, though.
Right, so your instinct is not to scam people.
No.
It was just to, you know, it's the hustle.
It was literally something to do.
Yeah.
I was bored as fuck.
Pizza, though.
I didn't have cable or internet growing up.
Pizza is like the lemonade stand that people actually want the thing from.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
I feel like I started off like selling Pepsi and didn't really have a market for it.
Yeah, that's tough. That's
pizza.
Tough.
Let's
go. Pizza, yeah, that's the universal.
Yeah.
Andy, speaking of universal, music is the universal language, and I know you've got some jams to share.
Oh, man, I got something to share with you that I think you're all going to really like.
I hope so.
Chanty Darling just put out a new track featuring Natasha Kamado. This is off of his most recent release, R&B Volume 1, out on Tender Loving Empire. If you're not familiar with Chanticleer True, this dude, he is just...
having a nice moment here.
He's
in the
a goddamn fashion icon, for one. The dude dresses better than anyone else in the city.
Sick.
Doesn't give a fuck. One of the most soulful R&B singers that I've ever heard. And he wants you to know R&B ain't no joke. And if you get a chance to go see this band live, I dare you to stand still because you will not be able to. They have choreographed dancers on stage, voguing. It is just a hardcore house party. You know, there's house music there. There's a lot of R&B and boogie funk layered in there. And Natasha Kamado does a lot of stuff with them. And she's by far my favorite local producer. She's really good. And, yeah. And on top of all that, it's very gay. And it's a fucking gay dance party that will bring in everyone and do just... All those stereotypes are gone.
I thought you said yay, and I thought it was going to be about cocaine.
Yay.
But this is better.
Yeah.
This is better.
Yeah. So check out the funkiest motherfuckers in Portland, and check out this album, R&B Volume 1. This song's called Running.
it's all right. Don't mean I'm in love with you. Tired of making it, stitching it up. You ain't for me. Please, Lord, I'll never be the prince that you want me to be.
We got stopped at the border one time, and our drummer had a pocket knife that his dad gave him when he was like a little kid, and just like never thought to like take it out because he just always has it in like his chest pocket.
Yeah.
And they were so pissed, and he was so terrified.
My dad told me a story about going to Windsor when he was a kid, and he had weed on him, and everybody in the car was like, "You get rid of that weed right now. There's no way we're getting busted because
you gotta bury it. You got to bury it by the border."
That's what he did. He went by the border and he buried it. And when he came back, he went to find it, and he couldn't remember where he put it, so he started digging. He found so much weed.
Oh, my God.
Everybody had buried their weed there.
Oh, my God.
And he was just like, "I don't feel right taking any of this. I'm just going to take one that I know is not mine, but in the same vicinity, so,
yeah,
you know, pay it forward type
that
of thing."
That was very kind of your father.
But, yeah, that's low-key the spot to find some weed.
Mm-hmm. For you kids out there near the Canadian border.
Yeah. Man.
Next time you're at Denf,
No joke, because like all of the area around the like bridge to Canada is just open land. Uh-huh. So I'm sure there's so much around.
Yeah, there's pocket knives. There's a bunch of weed.
Mm-hmm.
There's pills. It's great.
Lots
it's
of oxy.
Denf though, man.
Yes.
Shit.
I used to go to Denf back in the day and have so much fun. I was not into house music, but the hip hop headliners were always on point.
Still are, man. I feel like they get like Danny Brown and stuff.
Yeah. I saw De La Soul back in the day, and it was my favorite. It was like De La Soul, right? And right after that was like John Aquaviva, Bad Boy Bill. It's like all these like super hardcore house musicians, and I was just like, it was all right, but I should have just let go and enjoyed it. Damn it.
Yeah.
I was being too cool for the scene.
Yeah. Once
and
you
I wasn't.
House music is one of those things that once you dive into it and once you like really look into the history of it, mm-hmm. it's just fucking mind blowing. It's awesome. It's really cool.
Yeah, that is a big blind spot. I will cop to my ignorance of house music pretty much entirely.
Yeah, well, I think it's the kind of thing that like unless you get introduced specifically to an artist, then it's really hard to find because like I feel like the ethos of house music was always to just like be kind of underground mm-hmm. and like to do your own thing and mm-hmm. like it was a very like almost rebellious thing. And so even now it's hard to find.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the allure of it. It's really cool.
I think the only way to really get into house music without having a friend who's really into it to tell you how good it is to go to a show, go to one of these underground raves and just be in the moment. Because house music isn't so much about the repetitiveness of it. People say like, it's so repetitive. That's the fucking point. Because you are in a groove and it's more about being in the moment. You're not even looking at the DJ. You're in the crowd. No. You're dancing. And when those changes finally happen, they are momentous.
Feels so good.
Yeah, it blows
like,
your mind.
It feels
crazy.
like the repetitiveness to it, it almost puts you in like a meditative state.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like that drone.
Yes.
It is. Or that mantra kind mm-hmm. of
yes.
idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's just like, and they don't even need heavy changes. It's like the simple just like stopping and starting again or like one chord change every like 7 minutes is just like, oh my God.
Well, and like the stuff that I do like about electronic bass music is like when they can like use sound to sort of just like take the air out of a room for a second with a bass note or something like that, or like taking something away, it really has like a physical impact too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, this is speaking from a place of ignorance, but you guys are making a pretty compelling argument.
It's
for something I would have assumed mm-hmm. I didn't like.
See? You mm-hmm. just got to be open-minded to everything.
Yeah.
It's true. And you have to be willing to just fully let go. That's a big part of it.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
That's a great segue because I'm hoping you'll be able to kind of let go a little bit and indulge us in a game that we sometimes play.
Okay. What is it?
It's as close to a game. I mean, game is probably the wrong word entirely. There's no point and there's no winner. And
my
no
favorite
loser.
Kind of game, truthfully.
Yeah. It's a thought exercise. We call it scenarios in stereo because we're a music show. And so I'm basically just going to give you a hypothetical situation where people sometimes have a difficult time is you do have to adhere to the rules of the scenario.
Okay.
So you're trapped in a world that you're probably not going to like.
Oh, man.
And you'll have to think your way out of it here.
Okay.
Welcome to Drew's World.
So, it's October, so I thought that maybe the theme of this scenarios and stereo could be encounters with the supernatural.
Ah, I love it.
So, the first scenario I have for you, Jax, is that you are doing some thrifting on your tour, and you come across an old lamp, and as you rub it, a genie comes out, which is fantastic. So you
is it Robin Williams?
Well,
is it that genie?
It's whatever genie you like it is. Yeah, okay, so
it's
it is Robin Williams.
Genie from Aladdin, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the best genie.
It is absolutely...
The best. Mm-hmm. Shazam, though? Shazam? Shaq, no?
Yeah. I actually never saw
like
Shazam.
Shaq a lot. But I feel
the kid just like wishes for cheeseburgers to fall from the sky. And as a kid, that's like a momentous moment for me.
That's like awesome. like blank check when that kid becomes a millionaire and like has a water slide in his mansion.
It's a kid's dream. Anyways, so
it's like Nickelodeon's
Robin
dream.
Williams. Aladdin
Robin Williams comes out
up.
And he offers you the three wishes. But there are some caveats. Basically, if you wish for things for yourself, you're welcome to do that. But if you do, there's a 50-50 chance that someone out there in the world is going to die. Just drop dead the second you wish for something for yourself. Now, on the other hand, if you wish for something for other people, you will lose a tooth. And it's not going to be a molar, and it's going to be one of those front ones, and it's going to be in a way that you can't replace it. So which would you choose?
So you full-blown can't replace it. Okay. I would 100% like old-school Danny Brown this situation and go for the no teeth.
The no teeth.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. There's no way. There's no way that I would ever do something knowing that someone could could like for real die from it.
All right. Well, that was a definitive answer.
I am.
Yeah.
You didn't waffle at all.
Stern about this. Wow. Well, I know, and I
moral
also
conviction.
And wow. I'm also one of those people that like I feel like attractiveness is all like energy based, and I feel like it's like an aura based. It's like if I go around with missing front teeth, but I'm confident as fuck with that, then yeah. like I still feel like I could get some ladies. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think that is
maybe
definitely the case.
Maybe because of it. Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to go the exact opposite because I'm gonna take all those sweet things with my wishes, and I'm only killing three people. I'm probably gonna kill more than that in my lifetime.
And maybe
right?
not.
And not even know.
Maybe
it,
not.
Yeah. That's
you just don't know.
A 50-50 chance. Like
yeah. I feel like that's something I think about a lot when we're like on drives on tour is like the things that I have done that have like butterfly affected
yes
and just mm-hmm. like ruined someone else's life.
Yeah, totally.
Totally unintentional.
Like that time I threw that pumpkin off the overpass in front of that semi truck and it caused that huge accident.
Well, it's like, more like it's all the things you don't know that fucked up people's lives that you don't even think about or have no memory
or
of.
Like the little tiny things that you say that like will cause people to think about it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in that situation it was probably just because you like wanted to save 5 minutes. It wasn't even like a good wish.
Yeah.
And you could have ruined someone's life.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm still going to stick with the no teeth.
All right. Well, you've got a lot of making up to do because obviously you've been a monster.
Yeah.
Okay. In the second scenario, you encounter, it's kind of adjacent, and I would say it stretches the definition of supernatural, but you encounter a wizard.
Sick.
Now, this wizard is sort of omniscient and powerful, and he places you, it's kind of like the Beauty and the Beast curse. You're like, he's striking you. You have now are part of his plan. And he says, okay, so you're going to be part of this plan now. And he gives you the name and the location of a woman that you've never met. She's a stranger. You learn that she has a really important high-up job in a big corporation, and she's just about to give a very important presentation to the board of directors. And the wizard says, if you can convince this woman to dress as Hitler for her board presentation, it will set off a chain of events that makes her happier and wealthier than she's ever been, and it's the only way to save the lives of 10 children.
Oh, man.
How would you convince her to do it?
Holy shit. Whoa. God, that is in depth, dude.
Yeah.
Like, kudos.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank you.
I feel like it would have to be the kind of scenario where I'm convincing her to wear certain things separately and somehow making
the swastika and the mustache are going to be the hardest
I
part.
I know.
That is going to be
but
the
I do feel like
that's
I
where
do
she's
going to
be
like,
the most suspicious.
Well, this is kind of my, man, that is, what is the presentation for, though?
Real, it's like a neo-Nazi.
It's a cancer drug.
It's a cancer drug. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, that she intends to give away.
That but she intends to give away. I like
she
this.
She intends to give it away, but the pills are in the shape of swastikas as well.
Oh, no.
So it works out well.
That's independent of this.
We're going to pretend like they're not in the shape of swastikas.
Yeah.
They're very
painful
pills.
Go,
they're
oh,
not,
no.
They don't
they
work
cut
very
your
well.
Throat down.
Yeah, they're
oh,
not working
God.
Well in test groups. Mm-hmm.
But, okay, let's go with the scenario of cancer, you know, pills that she's going to give away for free.
But that person's going to be even less likely to dress up as Hitler.
I disagree because oh, you okay. can go with the scenario.
She's Hitler to cancer cells.
I have two scenarios in my mind. One being you ask her to dress like separately and like she doesn't realize that it happens, or you just like, fuck, man, this is.
What would you give her first? What's the first
I
item?
I don't even
when
know
you're
where
piecemealing
to go
together.
With this. Like,
she's
I'm
also
so,
a stranger.
Like,
how
I'm
are you
so
doing this?
Anti all of that shit with all
yeah.
of everything
yeah,
in my being.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
yes.
really terrible.
That it's like I don't even know if I feel comfortable joking about
yeah.
this right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, this has gone to a.
But
dark place.
I would say the kind of honestly. I don't even know how to answer this question. I
it
think,
almost makes you wish you hadn't met that wizard in the first place.
I know.
You know?
That's
I
the main
just,
thing.
I'm just going to skip over this because it's I just can't even touch on
it. It would be really hard to convince a good-hearted person
I know.
To do this terrible thing just because you say something good will happen if they do.
No, yeah.
Nate, what's you that?
Got some input.
Nate's got something.
She's just like, if you convince her, she's just wealthy from the rest of her life.
No, you save like 10 kids.
You save 10 kids.
10 too. Kids.
Children's lives
she's personally line. Satisfied. You know, it's hard to see the connections like we were saying with the first.
It would have to be very extreme, but if you came from the angle of like, honestly, like not, I don't even know. I just want
to. Would it change if you were the person who got to do it? Like you could do the same thing,
but you would
have to do a show.
I would never in my life dress as Hitler. I think that yeah. everything that
so those whole, you could live with those 10 kids on your hands.
I would. Oh, fucking shit.
Well, it's worth debating because as you have a public forum.
Yeah.
And if you're up there promoting this horrible, terrible thing,
yeah,
maybe that impacts more lives than just 10. Maybe it has a negative impact on the world that's greater than the loss of 10 children.
I just never feel like using something that is so negative and has affected so many people in a negative format should be ever be used in a scenario where it's even questioned if you're going to help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, the problem I'm having in this version of the game is that you're a perfect candidate for the conflict of these situations, but you're so morally strong and clear that your choices are very easy.
Yeah.
So some people are a lot more wishy-washy about what they actually think.
I'm just going to go ahead and take a firm stance. I have no idea what the fuck I would do. I have no idea.
That's fair. That's fair. I hope that nobody out there has chambered a plan for convincing someone to
Wizards,
dress like
go
Hitler.
Away. Like,
yeah.
This is...
We don't need that kind let's of just, forethought.
Let's just decide to like save the kids and not do Hitler. Let's do that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of saving kids, the last scenario that we have is that unfortunately you pass away, and of course you become a ghost in like a wide brim hat, you know. So it's very appropriate, and you're assigned to haunt this very nice family. It's, you know, mother, father, and they've got a small daughter. She's about 3 years old, and unfortunately, when you're haunting something, you have to sort of take there's two forks in the road you can take. Mm-hmm. The first is you can go ahead and like just possess that daughter, and you can live with all of your life's experiences and talents and abilities, and you can take over her life and live it again through just in her body. It's you, and you know, you can do things you never dreamed because you've got so much more experience and information. But unfortunately, that really does have a very negative impact on her afterlife. Mm-hmm. It kind of drains out her spirit. And so her ghost would be very ethereal and wouldn't have a lot of agency and would just kind of drift along through eternity. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a shitty afterlife for her. On the other hand, you can go the classic terrifying route and you can just scare the shit out of this girl, cause some deep psychological damage during her life, but her afterlife is an eternity of redemption and haunting.
And cool ghost powers.
Haunting, yeah, cool ghost powers. It's the best afterlife you can imagine. So which would your ghost do?
I think my gut instinct would be to possess her.
Yeah.
And let her just kind of float through eternity.
Okay.
Because I feel like there's just so much like terrible outcomes, so many terrible outcomes that could happen by like fucking with a little kid and like scaring a little kid, or like that just seems, and I'm the type of person that I feel like when you die, you just like nothing happens. It's just like you're dead. You close
your
eyes.
See, that's you cheating the scenario, though. That's how I warned you about
that. I know. But like, my outside life will eventually come into this scenario. And like, my outside way of thinking is just like nothing happens. Like, she'll be fine. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking.
it's easier to be selfish in that situation.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's easier to just be like, oh, she'll have a great life. And then she'll just close her eyes and that'll be it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can live with that.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Like, so you can live with scarring someone, but not killing someone.
Yes.
This is great.
Yes.
I feel like you've proven yourself to be an excellent person.
Hey, you know, not always.
Well, can we play one of your songs? Would that be okay with you?
Sure, totally.
And if you're okay, like my favorite song of yours is Glitches.
Cool.
That was one of my, that's my favorite. I love the melody in that song. That chorus gets me, just kind of sticks with me.
Thank you.
So if you're cool with that, I'd love to play that.
Yeah, for sure. Stripes don't always follow. Quick, we're a vote.
even as Flint Eastwood, your music has grown and evolved, and it's changed a lot since kind of that first EP, and you've continued to progress. How do you chart your own evolution as an artist, and what things are you looking to measure your growth? How are you defining getting bigger, better? What does that look like to you as you change?
I think for me, challenging myself to create new things is something that I've always wanted to do, and always, I get very bored, like, extremely easily.
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to see, like, what's next? What else can we do? What else can we do? And so for me, success is whenever I can complete a project or have an idea and be able to see it through. Success is also being able to, you know, be on the other side of the country and there are people that are actually in the room to see you. It's like, it's a really good feeling. Cause to me, again, my purpose in making music is to help people and to, like, kind of show people that they can be themselves by being myself. Cause whenever I was a kid, I really didn't have any, like, I didn't have any, like, women to look up to that were, like, openly gay and really, like, a very creative entity and, like, you know, directed their own visuals and, like, did their own art and, like, was very multifaceted. And I think there are some amazing women that have come out since I was a kid that are just, like, fucking killing the game. But for me personally, I just want to be able to inspire other people that they can do the same and to just spread positivity. So whenever I see people at our shows and they you know, are having a good time and dancing and, like, being free, I'm just like, yes, that's the purpose of music. That is success. Even if it's, like, four people that are at the show, like, I don't give a fuck. Like, let's have a dance party, you know?
This is probably impossible to answer, but yeah. I'm curious, like, so how does that mission inform the way that you approach the craft of building a song? When you're doing the nuts and bolts of putting a song together and the work that goes into that, how does that greater mission impact that and the choices you make on that song by song level?
Well, I think specifically for me, I always write about something that I'm dealing with. And so a lot of it will be written about loss, or it'll be about grief, or it'll be about loneliness, or it'll be about things that typically people go through to discover who they are, things that really, like, change you. I'm very fascinated by change, and I'm very fascinated in, like, a weirdly, like, selfish way of, like, my own change. I think as humans, we tend to very much fear it. And so I try to face it head on. And I think just being able to try to be as vulnerable as possible in my songwriting, I think it's definitely has caused me to want to be extremely vulnerable, because I think vulnerability is the ultimate sign of being comfortable with yourself, and loving yourself, because it's basically exposing your true self, knowing that you could be hurt. That's the actual definition of being vulnerable. And so approaching every song with how can I be the most vulnerable, mm-hmm. is definitely an offset of just, like, trying to have that mission of helping other people.
It's interesting. You talked about that vulnerability and that honesty. What's kind of the scariest thing that you've ever shared with an unknown public through your music?
I mean, I wrote an entire EP about, like, my mom dying.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hardest thing I've ever gone through. Cause it was, I don't know if you guys have experienced death, but it's like, it changes you as a person. It changes the core of who you are as a human being. And it's so crazy, because I feel like I even see it in other people of, like, you'll know somebody for a really long time, and as soon as somebody that passes away that's close to them, just, like, there's a light in their eye that just dims a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think writing, it was called Small Victories. Writing that whole EP was definitely, like, the most difficult time in my life. It was written over, like, a 6-month process, where I just, like, tracked all the different stages of grief, and decided to write it in, like, a very happy manner, because I typically try to be an optimistic person, but the actual subject matter was just, like, so fucking heavy to write about. And my last single, Real Love, was a very, like, vulnerable thing for me, because I've never really written a song about my sexuality before then, and I've really not really, like, talked much about my sexuality before this year. And so facing my sexuality and growing up in a religious household where, like, still, like, both my grandfathers were pastors, one of them a televangelist, my great-grandma was a pastor, I've got some uncles that are pastors, my oldest brother right now is a pastor, like, I come from a very religious household, and so being able to confront it and say, like, hey, I don't believe in religion, and I actually found happiness when I got the fuck away from religion,
yeah.
was, mm-hmm. like, a very, very vulnerable thing. And I think facing your fears head on and being able to, like, actually talk about your fears are It's just so mandatory as a human. It's so mandatory. Mm-hmm. Like, internalizing that shit will just fuck you up.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me when people don't have an outlet for something like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be art, but to have some way to get those things out in, even if it's an abstract way.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that are just sort of trapped with themselves at all times and don't have a lot of opportunities to get that outside of themselves.
I think it's really interesting. I think a lot of people believe that they don't have that, but it's just a matter of like you, for me personally, I learned to be vulnerable when I allowed myself to be vulnerable with people. Because it's really crazy. Like, if you start asking people questions and you do it genuinely, people will open up. They'll pretty much tell you, like, anything if you're, like, you sit there long enough and ask them enough questions.
That's basically what we do every week on the show.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing of, like, if you can ask those questions to people and you can be honest in answering those questions and not be afraid of answering those questions. Because I think as a society, we're very afraid of like, the awkward. And if you can just like embrace the awkward and view it as a beautiful thing and a beautiful interaction between two human beings, then it's something that like you can basically go through life being fearless.
It's also probably the most natural like human interaction.
Oh, yeah.
Is this like discomfort? I mean, if you think about it, most of us feel misunderstood all the time.
Yeah.
Most of us feel lonely some chunk of the time.
Yeah.
And most of us like have to force our way into some kind of small talk inorganically. Mm-hmm. So the awkwardness that comes from just like squirming with someone else is like the most realistic thing you can possibly experience.
Yeah.
And granted, I think there are certain situations where, like you were saying, people just don't realize that everyone's feeling those same things too. And it's the kind of thing, again, if you're just open to talking about it and if you're open to just like mentioning it to anybody, odds are the other person will be a little uncomfortable at first, but like just get over it.
Yeah.
Just like keep talking about it.
Yeah, just yank that Band-Aid
and it'll which sounds a lot like easier when I say it that way, but like it's hard as fuck. But once you you get past that threshold though, like you can pretty much be vulnerable with anybody if you just learn how, you know?
Yeah, I always think like nobody knows how to be. Like there's just not that much stuff to like that you can know with certainty. And so like once you have embraced that everyone's just kind of groping around in the dark, then it makes it a lot easier to connect.
And no
with
one
people.
Knows what the fuck they're doing.
Right. Yeah.
No one knows. That's right. Like at all. And once you accept that fact that no one knows what the fuck they're doing, and odds are they're not judging you, they're probably thinking of themselves. It's like a very freeing thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Andy, I think we got time for maybe one more jam before we take off.
Yeah,
is that
sounds
right?
Good. Mm-hmm.
What do you got up your sleeve?
Oh man, I got something. I gotta play a Portland song. I gotta stick with Portland today.
Yes, please do.
Oh man, this is a band that just dropped a new album. This is the Woolen Men. They dropped the off the name. It's just Woolen Men now. And
I think it works.
Their new album's
called The Woolen Men is a little bit clumsy.
Yeah. Their new album's called Post, and it's just solid from beginning to end. This is, I guess, what you'd call the single off of it, called Brick Horizon. And man, this sounds so instantly familiar, but so brand new every time I hear it. These guys are great. This is music for riding your bike at night, too.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
I wrote a book about this. That would be a cover blurb right there. Let's check out Just Woolen Men.
Look away, can't say just where I'm going.
Yeah.
Cher and Weird Al just never age.
Did you guys see America's Weird Al cut his hair, too?
Sweethearts.
Who did?
Weird Al cut his hair.
Like how much?
All of it.
No shit.
Yeah, he's got short hair now.
Pull the photo.
He kind of looks like Shaun White, the snowboarder.
Pull it up.
Yeah.
I kind of don't believe you. I'll be honest.
All right, I understand. It is Andy News.
He shaved a W into his head.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Or just fucking liar.
Oh man.
Man. I like can't even imagine Weird Al with shorter hair. Wouldn't it just turn into like a big fro?
Does he stop doing parody songs? Does it just go
originals. Mm-hmm. He finally does originals.
I picture him like short hair Weird Al doing like REM covers.
Oh,
or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's what Weird Al looks like now.
Fuck.
Let me
see. He's a handsome man.
Oh.
Dude. Hold up. Let's see.
Yeah.
He looks a little bit like the creepy janitor, like garbage man from Parks and Recreation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. But like in a handsome way. In a savory way.
Yeah, he has very great cheekbones.
Yeah. Here's another picture of him looking nice.
Oh, hi.
He looks so much younger with short hair.
I feel like he has like the aesthetic of Tom Green.
Mm-hmm. a little bit. That's the V-neck sweater with like the dark undershirt. He doesn't have like a necklace, but that's
like the colic in the front of the head. Just like you just want to like run your fingers through it.
You can tell the sleeves are a little bit too long. They go down to like mid-knuckle kind of thing.
90s.
Well, before we let you go, Jax, we're going to do like some real quick fast hitters. Sick. Just either or whatever comes up to your mind first.
Let's go.
Hannah Montana or Billings, Montana?
Hannah.
Great. That's the right answer. Cool. Florist or dentist?
Florist.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Didn't see that coming, but I'll give that like a B.
Every single flower that I see in my life, I have to go and smell it. I literally got out of the van when we were waiting outside and smelled the flowers across the street. This
I saw
that.
Yeah. My neighbor does good work.
Yeah.
Dunking a basketball or hitting a home run?
Home run. Oh, no. Basketball, definitely.
Okay.
Fuck. I can't jump at all. I wish I could.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Shooting a pistol in the air to celebrate something or dousing you and your friends with champagne to celebrate something?
Oh, champagne.
Okay. 100%. Like a pistol. I've always wanted to shoot a pistol in the air.
Oh, man. That's the only reason I have a handgun is to shoot in the air for celebration.
I once heard a story when I was a kid, like the weird news story of just like somebody got like a bullet in the back of their head because they thought it was like a loose bullet that somebody just like shot from miles away.
That was a Michigan thing. That was a Michigan thing because on New Year's Eve in Michigan, everyone shoots their guns
in Detroit.
And they came out with a public service message that said, please shoot your guns into the ground.
Yeah, that's...
Because bullets can hurt you.
That's actually very true. This is not fake news right now.
No, this is real news.
That's real, kids. Don't celebrate by firing pistols in the air. It's just as fun to fire cap guns into the air.
When my dad came to visit, he was like, hey, it's New Year's Eve. Can I just go shoot your shotgun into the ground in the backyard? And I was like, no, you can't. Please don't shoot my shotgun into the ground in the backyard. And he's like,
we're in a neighborhood,
that's what we do in Michigan. I was like, oh, that's right.
But I got a fortune cookie that told me not to do that one time. Don't shoot Andy's shotgun into the ground on New Year's Eve. Last one. Breaking a bottle over someone's head. It's like a fake bottle. You just get to do it. Or crushing a beer can against your head.
Ooh, bottle over somebody else's head. Always want to do it.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I would definitely crush pop cans on my head all the time.
Oh, really?
All the time.
Me too. Big fan. It's a cool move. It's a huge power move.
Do you guys say it is a big power move?
Yeah.
I was not putting up with the bully's bullshit when I was a kid. do you guys say pop or soda out here?
We say soda out here.
Oh.
When I first moved out here, I was still in Michigan, and I would say pop all the time.
Yeah.
And I slowly transitioned to soda.
Is it pop? Pop in Michigan?
It's pop. Yeah. What I don't understand is if you're going to do a nickname for a beverage or like something, why would you pick the longer syllable word?
Yes, that is weird. You're right.
Interesting. Yeah. A lot of wear and tear, like a lifetime of extra syllables.
Yes.
On your tongue, jaw, mouth. That adds up. That's serious.
My God, that was the appropriate
fractions of seconds wasted literally every other day.
I'm just trying to be the most useful of my time.
The other thing that Michigan does right, always and will always forever do right, is the wet burrito.
Yeah.
You can't get a better wet burrito than West Michigan.
Yes. that's very true.
Yeah, that's where the phrase West Michigan wet comes from.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You hit the Beltline bar. Just dive
in. Sounds like a delicious food item. Well, Jax, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey,
we really appreciate you carving out some time. Good luck on the rest of the tour. If people out here want to keep an eye on what Flint Eastwood is up to, what's the best way to keep track of you?
FlintEastwoodMusic.com.
That's the one. Awesome. Yeah. People who listen to this show know that we love you and we've been playing you for a long time, and we will continue to do so. And we are very grateful you being here.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a blast.
And thanks for hanging out with our kids before the show.
Dude, you made their day.
Our daughters are so cute.
Signed so many autographs.
Yep. Flint Eastwood, good for adults and children. That's how I sum it. Well, thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We appreciate you joining us. If you'd like to reach out to Andy, Nate, and I, you can do so via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE, Garbage Podcast. Also, if you liked it, maybe tell a few people about it. That never hurts. Never hurts to pass along the goodwill, pay it forward, as Haley Joel Osment would say.
Yeah.
Andy, what are we going out on tonight?
Ooh, this is some synth wave out of the hot winds of Los Angeles. Oh. They're called Cobra Man.
The Windy City.
The windiest of city. They got together to make a soundtrack for a skate video for Thrasher. If you're familiar with Ramp Man, you know their work. Fuck yeah, Ramp Man. Keep making those human ramps. Watch them. And they just put out a new album, or new soundtrack to another Thrasher video put together by the Warble Skate Collective called Toxic World.
This is getting to your roots, Andy. Skate videos? Yeah.
And this song this is called Living in Hell.
Well, for Jax of Flint Eastwood, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.